We know there are times where you're just too busy to sort through the mass of information that comes your way. So to make it easier for you to stay informed, subscribe to The Morning Agenda, WITF's news podcast, where the only agenda is you.
Funding for The Spark is provided by Capital Blue Cross, focused on creating a healthier future for our communities through innovations like its Capital Blue Cross Connect Health and Wellness Centers, which provide in-person services and inspire healthy living. Learn more at capitalbluecross.com. The Spark is also supported by UPMC. Choose UPMC for your family's health care needs close to home. Visit upmc.com/centralPA for a complete list of services and locations.
Our next guest is staff attorney of the Education Law Center in Philadelphia, Paige Jokey. And Paige recently undertook an initiative called the Black Girls Justice Initiative, which aims to uphold the rights of young black girls. And I'm happy to have Paige with us today to discuss more and, you know, do what I like to say, give us the game on this initiative. So, Paige, thank you for joining us on The Spark today.
Hi, good afternoon. Thank you so much for having me.
Yes, it is. It is my pleasure. Before we get into your initiative, can you tell us what is the Education Law Center?
Yes. So the Education Law Center of Pennsylvania is a nonprofit legal advocacy organization. And our mission is to ensure that all of Pennsylvania's children have access to high quality public education. Mm. And so you might be familiar with us in the news over the groundbreaking fair funding litigation that resulted in education being declared a fundamental right in Pennsylvania. You might be familiar with our policy and legislative work, and also our work on behalf of students across the Commonwealth to help them get what they need to thrive at school.
Yeah, there's actually something pertaining to fair funding happening in Lancaster as we speak. So yes, I am very, very familiar with that. So you yourself, what does a day in the life of the staff attorney at the Education Law Center look like?
Oh, it's the dream. I get a beautiful mix of a lot of different things, which I find to be really exciting and something that gives me a lot of fuel. One thing that I love about our work is that it's very intersectional. Mm. And also we approach justice work, and particularly education justice work, in a way where we use a lot of strategies. So I may be on the phone with a family who is seeking to protect their child from rights violations at school. Mm. It may be that I'm speaking at an academic conference, or I'm in meetings with legislators about the need to pass a Pennsylvania Crown Act, which we definitely need. Mm. And I could also be working on creating a policy initiative or on this work to ensure that students who are the experts of real-time conditions in our schools are centered and not only our priorities, but what we're asking for.
Yeah, that PA Crown Act, that's something that is definitely on my radar because I have locks and I don't want to be discriminated against for how the hair on my head grows out of my head. So for yourself, you are a attorney. Can you tell us about how you became an attorney? Can you tell us your origin story?
I would be delighted. So I am actually from Boise, Idaho.
Oh, wow.
And yeah, I'm the daughter of two educators. Mm. And actually, on my first day of kindergarten, I came home from school and I said, do I have to go back? My mom said, yes, you have to go back. The next day I came back from school and I said, I have to go again. My mom said, yes, you got to go again. And on the third day I came back and I said, is this the law that I have to go? And I actually called a lawyer that I knew.
Oh my gosh.
I found out that no, it was not the law. But my mom said, it's the law in this house. And I think that was sort of the point where I think she saw that in me. My mom was a public school teacher for many years, and I really admire the ways that she was able to transform young people's futures. And so I wanted to do that in a different way through the law.
Oh, yeah. So what inspired you? Now bringing this to your initiative, can you tell us more about the Black Girls Initiative and its mission?
Absolutely. So Education Law Center has been advocating specifically on behalf of Black girls for many years, including before my time at Education Law Center. But I was able to begin leading this work in the Philadelphia area around 2017. And now I lead our statewide initiative. And we've defined that as the belief that Black girls should be fully supported and affirmed at school. And in order to do that, we really need to undertake new and innovative legal strategies to advance their rights, because we know that the law by design is an instrument that is meant to be anti-Black, anti-poor, and really retrench a lot of unjust educational conditions. And so our Black Girls Education Justice Initiative takes aim at those things. And one thing that I love about it is that it's intergenerational. So I identify as a Black disabled woman myself. I love working with Black students who have lived experience with Black girlhood. And this work is really based on those connections and collaborations to partner across generations, because obviously I can speak to what experiences I had as a young Black girl in predominantly white education spaces. And I approach my legal practice both from my professional and personal expertise. But that doesn't mean that I'm the expert on what it's like to be in those seats today. And that's why creating intergenerational collaborations is so important, because young people are our future makers, right? And they have amazing solutions. And unfortunately, Black girls have been traditionally ignored in research, not provided a platform, even when they're super clear about what they need and what adults need to do to be supportive. And so our initiative is really trying to serve as a model of how to have ethical, productive, and really generative collaborations across generations.
Now, the focus specifically being on young Black girls in your work, why did you identify this population?
So Black girls are really important, a very important demographic in our public school population, but they've been traditionally ignored by research, by specific initiatives. And then what ultimately happens is, since Black girls aren't being focused on, the idea is that Black girls are doing fine. And the answer is they're not. And that is because the rules that they're supposed to follow are racist. Oftentimes they're vague and subjective. They're relegated to schools that don't have the resources that they need to allow students to thrive. And unfortunately, Pennsylvania is a really key example of this. You know, a lot of people wouldn't guess this, but our schools are some of the most racially segregated in the country, some of the most economically segregated in the country. We have some of the highest student arrest rates in the nation, and we're actually a site now of a lot of the really restrictive and targeted efforts to silence teachers and ensure that students are not going to learn about folks that share their lived identities and experiences in the classroom. And that just shouldn't be.
Yeah, absolutely. And going hand in hand with that, in what ways do you see systemic inequalities impacting the educational experiences of these Black girls?
Every single facet of students' educational experiences is impacted by anti-Black racism. And the girls to whom we spoke for our report were so clear about that. So they described experiencing it. They described watching and witnessing other girls experiencing it. They talked about how their teachers and other staff who identify as Black or Black women were also experiencing this. And so when you think about how does anti-Black racism show up, well, first, it has its origins in American slavery. You know, there was this idea that education was specifically dangerous. And so Black folks were banned from learning to read and being in education spaces. And we know, you know, we're coming up on the 70th anniversary of Brown v. Board, right? So we know that the system and the atmosphere of education really has been poisoned by anti-Black racism. So when you think about who's going to what schools? What resources and opportunities do those schools have? How are young people treated when they're at school, right? Are they going to a school where you can be expelled for literally having blonde hair or for wearing a protective style like we're both wearing? You know, those sorts of conditions make it very toxic and make it impossible for young people to focus on learning, which is what they should be doing when they're at school.
Yeah, so how do we identify anti-Black racism? Because it's not like, it's not like it's like, hello, I'm racist. You know, this is racism right here, calling on line four. You know, so how do we identify this anti-Black racism?
That's a great question. And that's something that I'm really excited that the report can do, is sort of give examples of how does this show up, right? If there's no Black people in a space, why is that? right? 48% of our school districts don't employ a single teacher of color in Pennsylvania.
Wow.
How can that be?
Wait.
Right? So that's
districts.
Racism at work. Yeah, sorry. I'm going to pause for a minute. Let that sink
yeah,
in.
Yeah, because that's whoa. What? Wow. Okay, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, all right, please continue. That kind of knocked me out of my seat. Oh, wow. Okay, yeah. I'm sorry. Going ahead.
If you're thinking about where, like, what are children learning? Like, is the only time you're learning about Black people, American slavery? Like, that is racism, right? Because you're not evident in a place. You're not celebrated. You're not being taught in a way that is careful and not going to re-entrench trauma.
Yeah.
Are we looking, who is attending the schools that are the least well-funded, that are historically and grossly underfunded? Well, that's 50% of our Black and brown children are in those schools in Pennsylvania today. We're so excited about the litigation and the remedies that we're going to get from that. But right now, we still have these conditions that are poisonous, right? Who's being arrested at school and why? Mm. We know that the majority of arrests at school are for things like excessive noise.
Yeah.
Like, think back to, I can remember being a teenager in a mall, right? You're happy, you're joyful, you're existing in a Black body. And are you going to be pulled out of school and arrested for that? Is that going to follow you the rest of your life?
Mm.
And so when people, if you're asking the question, where is anti-Black racism? You really need to be thinking about how is it showing up because it's there.
Mm.
There isn't a space that's racism free, unfortunately. We can't just declare those spaces. So.
Yeah.
We can make them, though.
Yes.
And that's what I invite everybody to do.
So how does the Black Girls Justice Initiative work to address these disparities within the education system that we're talking about?
I think that we use a lot of different strategies. So it might be that I'm representing a student who is dealing with a racist dress and grooming code. Every single student we talk to, actually, for the report had a really negative experience. They may have been discriminated against. They may have been stigmatized or harassed. And that also includes the Black women who were organizers and also Education Law Center attorneys. Every single one of us had a moment that we could recall in stunning detail about a time where we experienced discrimination around our bodies, what uniforms looked like, for how we wore our hair, for how we showed up in the room. Right. And so it may be that we're challenging a racist policy. It might be that we're getting a student a service that they've been deprived. It might be that we're testifying at a board meeting. Right now is a really good time for folks to get involved, actually, because many school districts, including Pittsburgh Public Schools and the School District of Philadelphia, are right now today going through their codes of conduct, which are their school rules for next year. So for folks that are interested in getting involved, look at what your school rules say, right? Testify to the school board, participate in community listening sessions, feedback sessions, and surveys.
Yeah.
And so it looks like a lot of different things.
Yeah, I remember in high school, a substitute teacher moved one of young Black woman students, moved her into the back of the room because one of the students said that her hair was too big and that they couldn't see. And so they moved her into the back of the classroom. So how can we address stuff like that, that may on the surface seem, you know, quote unquote, harmless, but ends up doing a lot more harm than what it seems?
Absolutely. And think about the historical trauma that that also places on the shoulders of that young person, that you as a Black person are at the back of anything, right? On purpose.
Yeah.
I can think really clearly about some of the things that could happen. If there is a family who were to call me about that, I would first direct them to the Pennsylvania Human Relations Act and the updated regulations that talk about that race is inclusive of hair texture and protective hairstyle, right? So if you're being discriminated against because you are wearing your hair in an afro or ever grows out naturally from your head, that's a problem. They can't say you have to sit in a certain area, you know? And I think that our teachers deserve resources and training. That way they're not perpetuating that harm.
Mm.
But it's more than just being told to move, right? It's about where they are placing that young person, how they're handling that situation, and the message that that young person is getting, likely in front of their peers, that they're less deserving of the educational space and that their mere presence is causing harm. And those are not lessons that children should be learning, but they're lessons that are being taught every day in our classroom.
So, Paige, what are some common misconceptions about the experiences Black girls experience within the education system?
I think the first is that inequities are normal and should be expected. They're not actually. We could have just school systems for our children, and we can and should. I think another misconception is that racism isn't everywhere, like we talked about a little bit earlier. Sort of one of the main reactions that we've seen from the report called We Need Supportive Spaces That Celebrate Us, Black Girls Speak Out About Public Schools, which is available free online. And if there are show notes, I'm happy to send you a link. And people are wondering, like, well, you know, if racism is everywhere, why aren't we learning about it? And that's because it's by design, right? The idea that white supremacy doesn't perpetuate itself in a vacuum, just it isn't accurate. And I think the third misconception is that there isn't anything that we can do, right? Students and community leaders have been clear for generations that there is a lot that can be done. Black people as a group have made so many advancements around education from the time of schoolhouses to the invention of community schools, and those sorts of things just aren't really considered. And so I would say that, you know, the misconception that there isn't anything that we can do or that the work isn't being done is inaccurate. We just need to really be diligent and focused on implementing these recommendations with fidelity.
And how do we begin to change the minds of some of these young folks? I'm going to use myself here as an example. Going through high school, it just got to a point where there was just going to be some kind of expected discrimination, whether it was from somebody a part of the administration, whether it was some teacher, hall monitor. There was just some kind of expected discrimination because that's what's been happening, you know, years prior. What do we do with that, with our young students of color, especially the young Black girls?
I think we acknowledge that what they are experiencing is real. We call it racism, right? We call it education civil rights violations, and then we help them effectuate their rights. And they have legal rights against being discriminated on the basis of their race or their gender at school. And I think one of the challenges is, especially with young people, adultism and bias is so common that, you know, when we were even first writing the report, folks were asking, well, are Black girls even saying what they're experiencing is anti-Black racism? Yes, they are. They're super clear, right? And they can identify 700 ways that it's happening for them every day. And so I think that one way that we can champion young people is to connect them to resources like the Education Law Center of Pennsylvania so they can learn more about their rights, right? Because as a young person in school, I didn't know that I could challenge some of this stuff. Right. I knew an authority figure was telling me what to do. And in my stomach, it felt wrong. And in my soul, it felt wrong. But I didn't know that there were actually ways that I could say, this is wrong. What you are doing is illegal. And it's going to stop.
Yeah. Yeah. So what are some of the main challenges you encountered while advocating for the rights of these young Black girls?
I think one of the main challenges is just getting folks to have a shared foundation, right? Even in rooms where folks are really educated, they may not know what a protective hairstyle is and why it is important and why it is historically and culturally and racially significant. Right? Why is it that school rules need to be rewritten? Because sometimes the idea is, well, a student wouldn't be suspended or expelled if they hadn't done something wrong. Right? So I always like to start presentations with giving some examples. So like, you could be suspended and expelled today in schools for the color of your hair, right? For slouching in your seat, for silently mouthing words, which is me anytime I'm on a Zoom presentation and the text is really small and I'm trying to read, right? For disruption, which is defined as standing, right? Drinking water or eating in class. And so I think getting folks to understand that these rules and exclusionary school discipline is harmful, right? And so once I think we get to that point, we can really be at the point for solutions, but we can't jump from, oh, there's a problem to instant solution, right? We do need to let that sit and we do need to let folks learn because then the solutions we're getting won't be responsive. And that's why we need to center the recommendations provided in the report, because we'll be doing a disservice if we don't implement the recommendations that Black girls are demanding and have consistently demanded.
Now, what do you hope comes from this initiative? I don't too much want to talk about the end goal, but rather the work. What do you hope that the work continuously looks like?
I would love new connections with organizations that are championing the leadership of Black girls, right? Mm. We are going to be holding what we're calling our Supportive Spaces Advocacy Institute in the coming months. And this will be a space where Black girls are going to connect with other Black girls who are leading in their communities to learn about their rights, to engage with the report's recommendations and do real-time advocacy, like demanding a Crown Act, demanding that Black history is taught in every one of our schools, you know? And so I think that that's what this work looks like. Mm. This work looks like meeting with attorneys who represent school districts. It looks like meeting with doctors who may be coming into contact with Black girls who are facing discrimination mm. and could make a referral. And the work is also going to look like continuing to do what we're already doing. So our direct service, our systemic advocacy, getting a fair funding system, you know, and I would love to work myself out of a job. I think that would be wonderful. I would love that. And there's so much work for us to do. And each person in our communities has a part to play. You don't need to be a lawyer to be doing this work. And in fact, there are many things that lawyers in this work should not be doing, and there's a spot for everybody.
Oh, well, we appreciate you coming on the Spark page and just giving us all this great information. Just one more question here. For the person that is sitting at home that either wants to access the reports or if they want to contact you, if they want to be a part of what you have going on, how can they contact you? Where can they contact you?
So find us at educationlawcenterpa.org. We are also on social media. Our handles on X and Instagram is LLCenterPA. And on Facebook, we're Education Law Center, all one word. If you would like to read the report, we have the full report online, and we also have it optimized for cell usage. So if you need something to do with your train time, please take a look at the full report. And we also have a 4-page companion guide. So if 36 pages is daunting, we have a 4-page guide and a 1-page guide for you. Please do reach out to us. We run a helpline and have a free intake line with questions. If you're in Eastern PA, contact us at 215-238-6970. And in Western PA, you can reach us at 412-258-2120. Thank you so much for having me on. I feel so energized by our conversation.
Yes, indeed. Thank you for joining us. And like I like to say, give us the game on everything you have going on. Thank you for joining us on The Spark.